Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and phoning it in today is the big red machine, Bob Finkbeiner.
Hey, how are you?
And, of course, the toughest hombre on this show is our producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
And last but not least, our soon-to-be Dr. Garrett Britton is back with us this week to drop some knowledge bombs on us as well.
Hi.
So, if... Hi.
Stellar intro.
If you didn't see Josh Hamilton in his return to Texas, he was booed. Booed like he was Alex Rodriguez. And actually, in fact, before the game, his wife had to call security because Texas fans were a little overly aggressive. So how would that make you guys feel getting that level of treatment returning back to your former stomping grounds?
Well, you know, I think he had to know that was coming, right?
I think so, but I think from what I read, it was that there were kids there, and they're shouting such awful expletives that they had to call security because of the children.
It is kind of sad, you know. It's like, I can't remember, a couple of years ago, one of the Indians pitchers' wives had to be escorted from the stadium after her husband imploded on the mound, and it's kind of like, come on, you know?
Right. I mean, I get it if Josh Hamilton was like a dick to everybody, but he played really well there for a while,
and what?
It seems like they're angry because, number one, he left, but number two, he didn't play well, you know, during right. the playoffs there.
He kind of fell apart on him there.
I don't know. I mean, I look at it like, I guess as a Pittsburgh fan, like, A.J. Burnett comes to our team, and we clap when he gives up three runs over five innings. Like, we give him a standing ovation for that. And A.J. Burnett forever will be just anointed as, like, a savior in Pittsburgh baseball because he came here and pitched well. And he'll be treated like that when he leaves. Like, he could leave and go back and pitch in New York next season, and we'd still probably clap when he came back. So it's kind of odd for me to see, like, a super megastar like Josh Hamilton, who did a lot of really awesome things in Texas, go back and get booed like that.
Yeah, and you know, kind of, and even if you're going to take it out on Josh Hamilton, if that's your choice as a fan, I think you probably should leave his wife out of it. She didn't do
a
whole lot.
I know one of the complaints was, go back to the Indians, and fans heckling athletes was the visitors' bullpen.
Oh, yeah.
Certain guys got heckled big time at Progressive Jacobs Field.
Well, that's like the line from Seinfeld, you know, in the Spit episode, where... the guys supposedly coming out of the bullpen giving Newman and Kramer the evil eye, and they're acting like they didn't do anything, and they're like, well, it's probably because we poured that beer on his head in the fifth inning. Generally, most of those bullpen problems are provoked.
Generally speaking. Well, on today's show, we're going to have our medical updates from Dr. Garrett. We're going to go to each of our respective clubs, talk about what's been going on in this first exciting week. Baseball's back, gents.
Yeah.
Baseball is back.
Love it.
At the end, we're going to talk about some of the games we've attended already. We've already been to a couple professional and minor league games. Some of us had prior obligations. So, yeah, and then we'll wrap up the show after that. So let's start off with Dr. Garrett Britton and his medical updates.
Is there a doctor in the house?
I'm not a doctor yet, but I play one on the internet. Alright, well, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a rough week for Cleveland. Do you all see the hit on Lou Morrison's?
Lou, tough hombre Morrison. That was a jaw rattler.
Zinger. so he's out. They took him out of the game. With cervical strain. That's what they're calling it
right now.
It's
called whiplash.
And if you look back at the video, that's exactly what it looks like. Yeah. So hopefully it's not significant. They said he may be ready today. I'm not sure if he's playing or not.
I wouldn't think he would play today.
So we're going to follow that one.
Yeah, he's not playing today.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, they had to lose the DH. They had Santana
right.
DHing, and they had to. They felt the need to pull Morrison from the game, which was probably the right thing to do. But... yeah, he took a shot on that one.
And Cleveland's had to make some moves also because of Kazmir.
That's right. Old squatty Kazmir. Falling apart before his first start. The old. Now, is that an oblique or is it a rib?
It's an intercostal. Intercostal muscle injury.
Andy knows about those, I think.
I think it'd be very painful. Not a whole lot of functional disability because of that. It's more of a pain thing. Because
he did throw a bullpen earlier in the week, and they, at that time they were saying, well, if the bullpen goes okay, he'll start. But then he said it went fine, and they said, no, we're going to put him on the DL anyway.
Yeah. He had an MRI done. It didn't show any fracture or anything crazy like that. So they're thinking mid-April.
Okay.
For return. And then Giambi.
Phantom injury.
Coming back Tuesday, hopefully.
It's called arthritis. He needs a lighter bat, I think. Tweaking his back.
And then I wanted to mention Carrasco.
Yeah, he's going to start on Tuesday.
Coming back, not off of an injury.
It well, was
the suspension.
That he didn't take care of because of an injury.
Right. And so he had a Tommy John in September 2011.
Yes, that's correct. So
it's been a while.
It has been a while for Cookie Carrasco.
It's going to be interesting to see how he does. I like to see how these guys do after the Tommy John.
Yeah.
You know, that speaks a lot to the surgery and how well the surgeon does.
Yeah, and he had some starts in spring training, and it was definitely, you know, kind of that classic Tommy John progression where the first couple of times he went out, it was like he felt like the catcher's glove was like the size of a dinner plate, and he just could not control anything. And then it was kind of, you know, third starts getting better, getting better, getting better. So what we don't know, because he's been on the roster but not pitching,
right,
is how have those side sessions gone now in the 2 weeks that he
leading
hasn't pitched since
right.
spring.
Right. It's going to be interesting. And that surgery is interesting because they are reworking the nerve, you know, that controls those muscles. So it takes a lot for the brain to catch on to get back to pitching.
Yeah. Well, he's going to start on Tuesday, and he obviously, after Bauer's start, which we'll talk more about later, has the leg up to take Kazmir's spot in the rotation. You'd have to imagine after Bauer's start, he'd have to look pretty bad on Tuesday to not get the next turn.
It's
but,
coming.
But, yeah, it was kind of a rough week for the Indians. You know, we had a lot of hopes for Kazmir here, and he hasn't even got out of the gate. It's a little unnerving with his mysterious arm injuries, or not arm injuries, but velocity issues with no arm injuries, that now he's kind of, oh, my side hurts, and oh, he's fine, but we're gonna put him on the DL anyway. And you know, it's kind of
a little questionable.
So
quick update from Detroit: Avisel Garcia is ahead of schedule.
Hey,
but it doesn't matter. And that's a follow-up on a heel contusion injury he had earlier during training. Then over to Pittsburgh, Brandon Inge.
He's down in AAA Indy right now. Actually, I watched him the other day. He was playing when Garrett Cole was pitching, so I was watching that game, and it was fun to see him out there. You can tell there's something about Major League veterans. They just carry themselves differently. So what's going on with Brandon Inge?
So he took that hit, and it turned out to be a right scapular fracture. Now, it's an incomplete fracture, so there's really not a whole lot of surgery can be done to do it. Like you said, he's headed to minor league. He's not really expected to be a day-to-day player, so we'll just have to follow him and see what they do. And then Gomez hit by that line drive.
Yep, was it off his chest?
Yeah, it was off his chest. So the x-rays didn't show any fractures, so just some muscle tenderness. He should be today. There was a question about him starting today.
Mm-hmm.
So no significant injury there. And that's it.
Wow. That was relatively quick and painless. That was like a good visit to a doctor's office when you go.
Unless you're on the Indians.
Yeah. Unless you're Scott Kazmir.
That wasn't very painless for the Indians.
Yeah. I'm like, Brandon Inge, Genmar Gomez, I can live without those two guys.
Yeah.
I don't know about everyone else, but Pittsburgh's coming out all right.
Ah.
Coming out smelling like roses there.
Like Buccaneers. That's what they ought to smell like.
That's right. Well, let's move on to what's going on with everybody. We're out of camp now. It's kind of weird. I was getting ready to say, let's go on and see what's going on in everyone's camps. We're out of camp. We're playing baseball. Let's see what's going on with everyone's team
camp
so far.
Camp is packed up, man.
Yeah, camp. We're out of camp. We're hitting the base paths. hitting the base paths running.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So let's go over to Cleveland, see what's going on with Cleveland, Jason.
Well, it was a busy week out in land of the Cleves. We started off good. Had a nice start to the season against Toronto. Took the first two games against Dickey and Morrow, and then lost the slugfest to Burley. But Tampa Bay has not been kind to the Tribe so far. In the first two games here, we totally have hit the skids on offense. Shut out in consecutive games, which the last time the Tribe was shut out in consecutive games was last August, which Bob will remember last August was quite painful for Indians
fans. Oh my
fans.
Gosh, it was awful.
So that's kind of a disconcerting stat, but you know, I was listening to the Indians broadcast announcers last night, and they were saying they had had dinner with an advanced scout from a different organization before the Rays game last night. And he was saying, you know, you had Matt Moore and Alex Cobb and David Price coming into this weekend. And his comment was just, you know, those guys are good pitchers, although I'm a little surprised how well Alex Cobb did. But he's like, I have no doubts that this team's going to hit. This lineup can hit. You know, Michael Bourne can hit. Nick Swisher can hit. Cabrera can hit. We all know Santana can hit, especially slotted lower. He's going to do better. So I'm not, you know, I don't want to overreact about two shutouts in the first week of the season. Big deal. The pitching was kind of up and down, and that's something I think we'll come to expect from this staff.
Well, let me ask you about pitching, too, because this is one of the things that I was thinking about when it happened, and everybody's been talking about it on Twitter and everywhere else. With Trevor Bauer getting that spot start, does it make sense? Because clearly Cleveland doesn't think Bauer's ready.
Right.
Or else they would have started him out in the rotation to start the season. Does it make sense for Cleveland to bring him up to face Tampa Bay when they know that he's not ready, when they know there's things that they still need to work on with him, and they have guys in the minors who are more traditional fifth starters anyways,
right,
that could come up, and that's what they're going to be anyways?
I think it's a tough call. You know, like, honestly, when I first heard Kazmir was definitely going to go on the DL, my first thought was that Corey Kluber was going to get the start. He's made a couple starts before. He's that traditional fifth starter spot man, you know, coming up from AAA. Now, of course, Bob can probably remember, and some of the listeners, Corey Kluber's first start was awful.
Oh, my.
He got
terrible.
Toasted in a completely different way than Trevor Bauer. He was just serving up gopher ball after gopher ball. But he's adjusted, you know, and he's got that kind of fifth starter stuff. The other options really aren't that good, because you've got Carrasco, who essentially would be in the minors, but they're trying to get around the suspension, and he's not available. You've got Matt Suzaka, who, if you thought Trevor Bauer's start was bad, imagine the same thing, but with 88-mile-an-hour fastballs in between. And then I think the other starter in Columbus is Giovanni Soto, who had a pretty rough spring, and then I was even talking to WBC of using him just as a reliever, because in a couple spring outings before that, he couldn't find the plate. So you kind of get to this, it's between Corey Kluber and Trevor Bauer, and, you know, for whatever reason, they wanted to see how he reacted. They wanted to give him that taste. And that's the guy they went with. The thing that's important to realize is the options. There's been a lot of talk about options and wasting an option. But if Trevor Bauer has an option year, you can call him up and down as many times as you want during that year. It's not like if he has three options, you can only call him up three more times. So he's going to get called up this year. I mean, you know that either Myers or Jimenez or McAllister or Kazmir is going to need some relief at some point. And even Carrasco, you know, you look at him, he's going to be on an innings limit from Tommy John. Mazuzaka's on an innings limit from Tommy John. Myers is probably on an innings limit because he's been a reliever. Kazmir's been on an innings limit because he didn't pitch last year. So they're going to need Trevor Bauer. So the option, that doesn't really matter too much to me. As far as Bauer's start, you know, I saw one thing, and the guy, I think it was a comment on Twitter, and the guy said, you can see in this start why Arizona wanted to be rid of Bauer, and then you can see why the Indians wanted him. Kind of the thinking of, he lasted five innings which after that first inning, you would have never thought he could make it more than three.
Yeah.
He gave up 7 walks, but only allowed 3 runs and 2 hits. You know, like, you think about that third inning, like, what your mindset of Trevor Bauer's performance was in that third inning. He was pitching a no-hitter at that point. Now, the Rays are not a great offensive team, and he had walked, I think, 5 people by that point. But, you know, you can see that his stuff is nasty. He just can't harness it right now. But you could see his composure out there on the mound.
Well, and that's one of the more...
trying to battle and get, you know... He did not want to just cave. You know, he had Evan Longoria up with the bases loaded and no one out. And you could see he couldn't locate anything, but he was not going to groove one.
Yeah, that's one of the more impressive things that I think came out of that, if anything, was that that first inning took him 23 pitches to get through.
Yeah.
But he got through it relatively... Was it one run he gave up?
One run on a walk. Rayburn bailed him out.
Right.
Had a great play in right field and then threw a strike home to get a double play.
I mean, you want to talk about learning experience and, like,
yeah,
if you're going to take something away from that, it's that Trevor Bauer really worked his way through that start.
Right. And on the flip side, if I'm Terry Francona, I can sit there and say, how would Trevor Bauer have reacted differently if in the third inning or the fourth inning we went out and got him some runs? You know, here's a kid. He's literally dancing the tightrope for 5 innings with no offense, you know? And so it's kind of like one of those things. You're sitting there like, hey, guys, why don't you help old Trevor out with your bat? You know? So it was up and down, you know, definitely that first inning was a nightmare. But again, he persevered. He worked through it. You know, it's like I've heard a lot of comments about McAllister, that one of the things people hate about McAllister is when he gets in a jam, he folds up. You know, he'll have 2 outs and 2 strikes on a guy and runners all over the bases, and he lets a hit go, 1 run scores. Now it's like, okay, refocus, get the next batter. No, it ends up being a 3-4-5 run inning. You didn't see that from Trevor Bauer. You saw, I just walked in a run, move on. I got to get this next guy. I got to bear down. I got to get this guy. And you could see this, like, determination on his face. His face was beet red from embarrassment/frustration, I think. But it was just, like, laser focus on the home plate, you know. And, you know, you had guys like Cabrera and Kipnis coming over and being, hey, let him hit it. You know, let us get you some outs here, man. And he couldn't even find the plate to let anybody hit it.
Right.
You know. But, we'll see. He's going to go down. Like I said earlier, Carrasco is going to have the first shot to take that spot. So I would imagine he's going to take that from him, and probably rightfully so. He needs some more seasoning. And it's important to remember, you know, the only other guy from that draft class that's in the majors is Cody Allen. So just because he's struggling and still has a lot of work to do, it's not like he is lagging behind as a prospect. And Cody Allen, he looked awful last night too. But anyways... a couple guys in the minors I just want to talk about real quick. Tyler Naquin had a really good start. He had a 5 RBI game with a 3-run homer and a double. And this is a guy, you know, he's more of an advanced bat coming out of college. So we'll see if how quickly he can advance through the system. A performance like this kind of makes you think that in 2014 he could possibly be on this roster. Because of how advanced he is, he may not, be at AAA before maybe the end of this season or at least at the beginning of next season. Jose Ramirez skipped High A. They skipped him past High A Carolina, and he is batting .500 in Akron. So he just continues to hit. Obviously, he's not going to hit .500, but when you skip a level and come out of the gate that well, that says a lot about what the Indians think about him. Francisco Lindor ended the Mudcats game the other night. I didn't see it, but everyone was just raving about it. A backhanded play in the hole, very, very deep in the hole, and I guess he just threw an absolute seed to first. The Carolina manager said after the game that there's not too many people on this planet that can make that play. So, well, you know.
That's always nice to hear.
That's a nice thing to hear about your stud prospect. And the last thing is, as I talked about in my one article, Tony Wolters has been moved to catcher.
Yes, yes. Another one of your... He was a middle infield prospect,
yes,
wasn't he?
Yes, he's the first casualty of the glut of middle infield prospects. He should have started in Akron, and Jose Ramirez is starting in Akron. So again, and they had to skip a level for Jose Ramirez to start in Akron. So you start to see what the Indians think of Jose Ramirez and what they think of Tony Wolters, I guess. So he's going to be DHing a lot as he learns the everyday duties of catching. He has caught, but not since high school. So we'll see how Tony Wolters handles that. He has the bat, I think, to be a very good catcher if he can handle the defensive side of it. And I think that's what they're trying to play here. They're seeing a need versus a surplus and trying to switch someone in that, if that, he could handle it, would be...
That seems like such a weird transition to me, because very rarely do you see people who switch from a position to catcher. You know, a lot of times you'll see guys switch from catcher to another position. Like, the one that comes to my head, you know, Jason Mott started out as a catcher and, you know, went out into another position. But you don't see a lot of guys who, especially at the professional level, switch from...
Right.
You know, like, you see it at the college level, maybe to a degree. Like, Buster Posey started out as a shortstop and... Right. You know, transitioned into catcher.
Well, and another Indian who made that similar transition is Carlos Santana, who originally was a third baseman, and they converted him to catcher.
On that note, also, let me add a few other guys for you. Victor Martinez was a shortstop, converted to catcher.
Yes, he was. That's good.
I do believe Kenley Jansen was a catcher, converted to pitcher.
Well, you do see that. Yeah. I was going to say that. Right. You do see position players converted to pitcher. Jerry Gill, a guy in the minors for the Indians, is a failed shortstop prospect trying to turn into a reliever.
And former Indian Shin-Soo Chu was a pitcher converted to the outfield.
Yeah. Yep. And then remember, he had to have Tommy John surgery
right,
as an outfielder from all those years of pitching.
Yeah. I guess my point is, though, that like catching is a very, very hard position, and they typically develop slower than other players to begin with. You know, that's a very odd transition. Usually you'll hear like, oh, this guy's not going to make it as a shortstop, let's flip him to second base. Oh, he's not going to make it second base, let's flip him to third base.
Well,
oh, it turns out he's not an infielder, let's move him to the outfield.
And, you know, and I wonder, it doesn't seem like Tony Wolters was in on this decision. It seems like Tony Wolters found out he was being moved to catcher when the Indians called him up and told him, hey, we're going to leave you in Carolina again this year, and you're going to play catcher, by the way. So I think it's going to be interesting. You know, are they doing this? It really seems right now like this is not a flexibility kind of thing. Like, they're not like, oh, we're going to let you play catcher so you have some flexibility in a different path. It really looks like they're saying, no, you're going to play catcher. You can leave your second baseman's glove at home. Not quite to that extent. As they said, he will play there a little, but they're really, really pushing the catcher. You know, it'll be, do they envision this of him, you know, as a second catcher slash DH? Do they, you know, what, I don't know what this plan, how it runs out in the end. It is a strange move, but it's forced because of a guy like Jose Ramirez, who so far is showing that they were completely correct in letting him skip a level. You know, a guy like Cord Phelps, who now has shown he can hit, they have nowhere for him to play. He really is not a shortstop at the major league level.
Yeah.
So supposedly they're having him play in the outfield, first, third. They're just trying to find him a house, you know, someplace he can call home. And the other guy, the last thing I'll say, who has forced this change is Joey Wendell, who is a friend, you know, big podcast supporter here for Joey Wendell, but his development last year has forced them to give him every day at bats at second base in Carolina, where they didn't think going into the year, they thought he was going to be the odd man out. But now it looks like Tony Wolters has become the odd man out.
Interesting. Well, it was a very, very up and down first week for Cleveland. Yeah. You know, a lot of good things happening in their farm system, so hopefully that trend continues. Well, let's move on to Bob in Detroit. Bob, what's going on in the first couple days of Detroit season?
Well, the Tigers open up the year with the victory at Minnesota, with the save being converted by one left-hander named Phil Koch, and we'll discuss with him in a second. Day two was not as pleasant for Tigers because Philco came in to close the game out and disaster hit as he blew the save and eventually lost the game 3-2. Other news notes, Drew Smiley, who was running for the fifth spot starter with Porcello, had a four-inning save the other day on Friday, which is remarkable. He has his first win, his first postseason win, and his first save all against the Yankees.
I assume you're going to say more about the bullpen, so I'll just let you go for now. I have some comments, but I assume you're going to get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to some other comments here in a second. Interesting, the first turn through rotation, the only Detroit starter to throw more than five innings was Porcello, who threw 5 1/3 against the Twins on Thursday, April 4th. They did happen to re-sign Jose Valverde to a minor league contract, which Jim Leland called a no-brainer, which I'm not so sure.
Raise your hand there if you're excited about that signing.
Does that mean you don't have a brain or you don't need a brain to make that signing?
He also came out and said that he hopes that Benoit will take over the closing duties here. So it's kind of interesting to see how he uses Benoit going forth this week.
Well, Bob, let me ask you this too. With Detroit's bullpen, they have Phil Koch, who awful against righties, but I guess serviceable against lefties. They have Al Albuquerque, who's great against righties.
Looked awful yesterday.
And so, I mean, I'm assuming Benoit pitches well against both. He's a guy that you can call in regardless of whether it's a lefty-heavy lineup or a righty-heavy lineup, correct?
Right. Yes, that's true. And the first day, opening game, Leland did use Benoit to go through the heart of that Minnesota Twin order, too. So he's put Benoit in situations where he's had to face the best hitters opposing teams, but it has not gone to him yet in the closing role.
Go ahead. Nope, you're good.
Bruce Rondon in Toledo has made one appearance so far. He threw one inning, walked one, struck out one. And the other notes was Casey Crosby made his debut for the Mudhens this year and got roughed up a little bit. He threw three innings, allowed five hits, six earned, four walks, and four Ks. So that's the best appearance in his quest to make the rotation eventually. Going around the farm system real quickly for Detroit, we'll discuss the Erie Seawolves in a little bit here more, but Hernan Perez off to a hot start, as is Ramon Cabrera, the catching. West Michigan has saw a stellar debut by Montreal Robertson, who Keith Law had ranked number 10 in his top 10 organizational prospects. He went five innings pitched with no hits allowed, walked one, struck out three. In Lakeland, our buddy Mick Reinhard, question referred to Dean Green. He's on fire beginning this season. He's 5-for-12, hitting .417, has two walks and one strikeout. And the other big, tall batter, Stephen Moya, who we talked about on the podcast before, is off to a 5-for-15 start himself.
So about the Tigers bullpen, Bob, I was watching the Tigers-Yankees game yesterday. Scherzer started, and I believe it was the fifth or the sixth inning. And Albuquerque really got himself into a jam. There were runners scattered all over and high pitch counts and the like. And they showed a shot on Fox of Scherzer in the Tigers dugout. And he was just leaning on the railing, shaking his head. As Albuquerque frittered away his lead. Now, in full disclosure, Scherzer got pulled because he completely lost the strike zone.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those things, and maybe this is what the Tigers are realizing and why they went out and signed Valverde and why they feel that was a no-brainer. But, you know, there's been a couple years, thankfully the Tribes had good bullpens lately, but about 5 years ago they had some really bad ones, and man, that can just take the heart right out of a team when a pitcher pitches not even great, but well enough to keep his team in the game, and the bullpen just goes out day after day and squanders it or makes it tight. You know, like if you have a good bullpen and you can hold that lead and you know you're going to hold it, you have a different attitude than if you just leave the game kind of going, oh boy, we'll see if see if they can hold this.
It makes me wonder, because I'm assuming that the team is trying to limit the workload initially of the starters, which I can understand this time of the year when it's nice and early and cold out. But at the same time, you have to rely on your bullpen even more to bridge that gap to finish those games until your starters go 6, 7, 8 innings eventually throughout the year. But you hate to see a bullpen start blowing these performances
right
early in the year.
Yeah, pulling a Carlos Marmol and losing his job in the first week of the season.
Oh, I don't worry. We're getting to Carlos Marmol.
I know you were there for that.
Anything else going on in Detroit, Bob?
Nope, that should be about good. We'll discuss more of the Seawolves here in a moment.
Yeah, we'll get down to that in a sec. Moving on to Pittsburgh. Well, the good news, folks, through the first 5 games, the Pirates have only given up 10 runs. The bad news, however, the flip side of that coin, through the first 5 games, the Pirates have only scored 6 runs.
Eesh.
There's already 12 players in Major League Baseball that have scored more runs than the whole Pirates team has altogether.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Now, you know what? Here's the thing. Everybody, you know, when you look at stats at the beginning of the season, everybody likes to flip out because you look at these numbers at the beginning of the year and they're ridiculous. Like Mark Reynolds is hitting over 500 to start the year. Well, there's stretches during the middle of the season where Mark Reynolds is going to hit 500, but because he's already hitting 250 on the year, you're not going to notice it because everything is, it's an average. It's balancing itself out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And no one's paying attention to that. At the beginning of the year, when Mark Reynolds hits 3 home runs, you know, in his first 3 games, and he's got 16 RBIs, and he's hitting 5, everyone's like, oh, Mark Reynolds is the greatest player ever. Every player goes through those streaks.
Chris Davis.
Yeah. Oh, what was I saying?
No, I'm just saying Chris Davis.
Oh, yeah. So... So you have to pay attention to it.
Yeah, you don't want to, you know, you could call any show the first week like this, you could call it, you know, the overreaction edition.
Yeah.
Because any reaction you're going to have is going to be an overreaction.
Right.
A guy's going to have 500 at-bats. So what if he strikes out, you know, 10 times in the first 30?
Exactly. It's all going to balance out in the end. So the fact that Pittsburgh isn't scoring runs right now shouldn't be, like, the most alarming thing you've ever seen. What should be more alarming is that
there are parts that can be alarming.
The alarming part is that the lineup was doing the same thing last season.
Exactly. There you go.
It's almost the same lineup. We've improved, you know, marginally in some places, and they're still doing the same thing to start off the year this year. So that's kind of the alarming thing, but our pitching looks great.
As you say that, Mark Reynolds hit his second home run of the game.
Mark Reynolds he smoked it. That home run against Toronto where he hit it to the second deck was one of the
and it was at his eyes.
Oh my god!
How you get, you know, how you can get a ball with that
turn around
force.
On a ball like that? Yeah.
Anyways, back to the Pirates.
So Clint Hurdle finally moved Neil Walker to the 2-hole, which
hey!
I was super pleased about because there's a 20 different on base percentage career wise between Walker and Garrett Jones, who he was hitting there. So that's going to mean more guys on base for Andrew McCutchen. That's going to mean more guys on base for Garrett Jones, who's going to be hitting lower in the lineup now. So I was really excited to see that switch, and it didn't take too long to get to it. Our new toy that we got, Jonathan Sanchez, who is his, I think it's $1.35 million contract kicked in once he was up on the big club. Yeah, he pitched against the Dodgers on Friday night. I was watching between the fingers as my hands covered my eyes. But He came out of the game. He threw 5 innings. He gave up 3 runs. He struck out 4. He wasn't awful.
Yeah, he was serviceable.
Which awful was what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I mean, he was kind of erratic at times, and you know, you can still tell that control just isn't there. But you know, he did okay. Jameson Taillon down on the farm, he looked great in his first start for Altoona, and they were actually playing the Seawolves to open up the year. He threw 5 innings, gave up 4 hits and a walk. He struck out 4, no earned runs. They kept him relatively low, 75 pitches for his first start of the year. 43 of those pitches were strikes, so it looked fantastic. We actually had a couple of fans that were at the game that tweeted to us, said his curveball was just filthy that day. So that's always good to hear. Garrett Cole started his first game for the Indianapolis Indians against the Columbus Clippers, actually.
Hey, there you go.
And He looked sharp through his first 2 innings. Like I said, I was watching the game, and he cruised through the first 2 innings. He looked great, but he labored over the next couple. His fastball is sitting around 95, 96, so, you know, coming out the gate, He's not the of the Chris Perez mentality where he's going to try and throw the ball through the catcher's mitt 102 miles an hour. But, you know, he sat there consistently the whole game. His final line, he had 4 innings, 5 hits, 2 strikeouts, no walks, and he gave up 3 earned on his night. A couple of the games that I went to, some things I got to see. Adalberto Santos for the Curve. In his 15 plate appearances, he's gone 5 for 11. But he's also drawn 4 walks, and that's doing what he does best, which is get on base. That's what I love about Adalberto Santos.
Third time's the charm.
Yeah, just got it right there. So, and he was, you know, he's right outside my top 20 prospects for the Pirates. He's one of those guys that you look at. He doesn't do anything great, but he does everything relatively well. And like I said, he gets on base, which I love that in a guy. I think that's one of the bigger skills that I look for. For the Bradenton Marauders, they're one of the bigger clubs to keep an eye on for the Pirates. They have a lot of their big prospects down there. Nick Kingham cruised through his first 3 innings in his start the other night before he got knocked around a little bit in the 4th inning. Kingham said that he was getting too comfortable and he was relying on his fastball a little too much. He didn't really throw too many off-speed pitches, and he said the second time through the lineup he probably should have mixed it up a little bit. Out of his 3 earned runs that he gave, or his 3 runs he gave up, only 2 of them were earned over the 5 innings. And that game too, Gregory Polanco drove in the Marauders' only run while he recorded 3 hits, and he also swiped a bag.
Nice.
So I'm feeling pretty good. You know, our guys are kind of our prospects that we want to see clicking are clicking, and they're doing really well. And actually, as we talk, I think, Erie's up on the Curve 5-2 in the bottom of the 8th. We had Stormy Pimentel started the game today for the Curve, and he threw 6 really solid innings, but it looks like Erie's jumped on the bullpen.
And as we talk, baseball, the baseball gods of leveling out are in effect. Everyone said, you know, oh, the Indians post 2 shutouts against the 4 and 5 starters for the Rays. David Price tomorrow, here comes a sweep. They are winning 10-0 in the 7th inning.
Boy,
against David Price
laying it on thick. How many podcasts ago was that? 2 or 3 podcasts ago, where you say those runs are coming in bunches.
Yep. They had a 3-run 3rd and a 4-run 5th and a 2-run 7th. So we're getting some crooked numbers. That's how this team is going to be.
They're coming in bunches, folks. Well, our last segment for today, we're going to talk about some of the games that we've attended. If you've been paying attention on the website, we've been doing some game recaps that we've been going to, and we're going to keep that up all throughout the year. But we're going to do a quick review of the games that we attended, some of the things that we saw, some of the points that we took away, and some things that we think that might kind of lead to in the future. Starting off, I actually attended the Pittsburgh Pirates Altoona Curve tune-up right before the season started on March 30th. And that was kind of neat, number one, because I'd never been to the Altoona Curve stadium before. I think it's People's Natural Gas Field or something. Bob, you said you'd been there before?
Yeah, I was there before. What used to be called Blair County Stadium.
Okay. And one of the most unique features of that stadium is the theme park that they have right behind the right field wall has a humongous roller coaster that that's right in right field, which I can only imagine when the season, you know, when it's nice out in the middle of the season, you have these 50 kids screaming on the way down. It's got to be awesome for those right fielders to listen to while they're trying to catch a pop-up.
I bet they love that.
Yeah. And the other really unique aspect of that game, too, was that some of the Pirates players actually started for the Curve to get their last work in before the regular season started. So Jason Greeley started the game. So for the Altoona Curve, so we got to see Jason Greeley throw, and that was kind of neat as well. After that, I actually came home, had a quick Easter, and then went down to Pittsburgh for opening day against the Cubs on April 1st. And
how many layers of long underwear were you wearing?
I had 5 layers of shirts on. I had my scarf and my wool knit cap, as well as shorts underneath my jeans and 2 pairs of socks.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I was comfortable. My toes got a little cold.
Did you have a warm or a cold beverage?
I had a cold beverage.
I had
a water.
Okay, you must not have been too cold.
I needed to stay hydrated.
Yeah.
It was just a brisk 28.
It was, yeah. And let me
with
tell
30
you,
mile an hour winds up the
well,
river.
That's the thing. Like, it was nice, like it was sunny. And when the sun was out, it felt great. But that wind coming off the river there is it's freezing.
Fierce.
Oh, it's freezing. It cuts right through you. So I was at opening day. It was fantastic other than the freezing cold weather. I think they announced the attendance at over 39,000.
Wow.
But it didn't feel like, and it didn't look like there were people there. I think a lot of people must have looked outside and been like, nah, it's freezing out there. No way am I going. Because there were a lot of empty seats everywhere. And even I was sitting up in section, I think 308 or 307, somewhere up there. And the four or five rows that were behind us, there was nobody in them. I mean, we sat in our row, and it was basically a row to ourselves. But we got to see. I'm sorry, Bob. Go
ahead. We should let our friends of the podcast know, though, that Andy does not do well with cold temperatures.
Oh, I shake like a hairless cat in the cold weather. I really do. I'm like a chihuahua. I hate the cold. And last year we went to opening day in Cleveland. That went on 17 innings in Cleveland when the sun goes down on opening day.
And it was opening day, not home opener.
Yeah, it was opening day, not the home opener. Right. I mean, it was
true home opener.
That sun goes down behind the Jake, and it just, like, it's a shadow on the whole stadium, and it is. I didn't even finish my Yingling. I was like, no way. I just can't put any cold liquid in my body right now. So Pittsburgh wasn't that bad. The sun was out most of the game. But yeah, we got to see Carlos Marmol start his implosion.
Ah, yes.
And it was, I think we were just getting Samardzija just shoved the whole game. He was still throwing 96 miles an hour when they took him out. And I think I want to say did James Russell come in first or second? Whoever came in, whenever they got to Carlos Marmol, all of a sudden I felt like my heart went a little flutter. I was like, we got a chance to be in this game.
Oh, wait, we can get this.
Like Carlos Marmol
proceeded to dance the tightrope.
Oh, man, it was. And just watching Marmol, watching him live, you could tell, like, this guy just doesn't have it. Like, he doesn't have, it's like trying to shove a square peg in a round hole. It's not going to work. And you can try and make it work so you can trade him later, give him as much value as you want. It's not going to work for Marmol. And we saw that today. He's lost his job. They officially announced that Marmol lost his job to Fujikawa. So,
yes, which was predicted in one of my fantasy leagues when Marmol went off the draft board. Someone else said, you can have him. He won't have his job by Labor Day or Memorial Day. Yeah.
Yeah. And he doesn't. So that was the second game that I attended already. And the third one, actually, Bob and I attended. We were doing a little scouting there. We went to opening day for the Erie Seawolves. And the Seawolves faced off with the Altoona Curve. Bob, anything that you noticed about the Seawolves? Anything you took away from that game on opening day?
I thought that Ramon Cabrera, despite his very short stature, looked very good at the plate. Showed a lot of patience. Daniel Fields had a very, very nice bomb, you would say.
Oh, he crushed that. There was a fastball someone just left middle down, and he ripped it. Was it right center? In between the 400 and 365 marks on the wall. He destroyed that ball.
Yes, for a grand slam. And the guys, the most excited to see in person was Tyler Collins, who went hitless, and as of right now remains hitless so far in young season. But he does show good patience to play. He's only struck out four times and has three walks so far.
Yeah, that I like Jarriott. I might be biased because I'm from this area. I really like Jarriott. I like it a little less now that they took the walkway. I thought that walkway was phenomenal. Now they have it all blocked off with the Civic Center or whatever they call it now. It's
the Erie Insurance Arena.
Yeah, the Erie Insurance Arena. You know, you can't walk up there and see baseball from that unique angle anymore. I still love the UT, though. I think it's one of the better fields in minor league baseball that I've been to. As far as for the Curve, Brandon Compton started for the Altoona Curve. He threw 86 pitches. 50 of those were for strikes across five innings. He looked pretty good to start out the game. You could tell he kind of lacked the command as the game went on, though. One of the things too I was watching for the Seawolves was their catching prospect James McCann, and he pegged Adalberto Santos stealing second, showing off he had a fantastic throwdown to nail him there. But it was cold at the UT too. It was a warm day out, so I think people were kind of, I think it was like 49 degrees during the day, and so you saw people that came to the stadium like, oh yeah, it's going to be 49 degrees all night. Well, that was a 6:35 start, and the sun went down pretty quickly after that, and it wasn't long before you were seeing your breath and And you were feeling that cold weather cut through you.
And I was supposed to be enjoying that cold weather with you, but while you were freezing, I was enjoying a reception at the Baldwin Reynolds house.
No.
With political satirist, wait, what's his name? Mark Russell.
Yeah?
Yes.
I'm sure that was much more enjoyable than freezing on opening day at Jerry.
He was very funny, and it was not cold, so there was that bonus.
there is
a plus. You know, it's kind of like, I wish I could have done both.
Yeah. Yeah. I have no shortage of opening day experience now. I've been to...
I know. You've been traveling, hitting the road here for the good of the order for the last week.
I've been hitting a lot of opening days. That's for sure.
Home opener in Cleveland on Monday.
Oh!
Sold out, though.
Ah! Everybody's excited with all that money you guys
That's
bet.
Right. Hiroki Kuroda be making the start against the Tribe for the Yankees.
Well, take it easy on him. He's one of my... fantasy pitchers.
No promises. Ask David Price. Michael Bourne just hit a home run.
On that note, let's wrap up
Speaking
our podcast
of overreactions.
For this week. One of the things I want to make sure we hit on before we completely wrapped up though was thanks for the iTunes review. We've been getting a great response with our podcast, and we got our second iTunes review from Kasek. He said he's a Pittsburghite moving to Cleveland, so he appreciates being in the know on Cleveland. So
there you go.
K-Sec, thanks a lot for your review. We appreciate it. Those reviews are awesome. They drive up our popularity, keep everyone coming to us, keep people listening. That's what we like. Well, that's going to be it for today's show. We'd like to, again, thank our listeners. We appreciate everybody who has been listening. We're going to ask for... any reviews, if you guys wouldn't mind, on iTunes. Like I said, we love the reviews, driving up our popularity. If you want to check us out on the internet, you can check us out at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, @tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. We'd like to thank Dr. Garrett for joining us again today. And for Jason and Bob, this is Andy Burdick, and we'll see you next week.